This is the AgriTalk podcast brought to you by Syngenta, delivering better food for a better world through outstanding crop solutions. You know what, guys? You don't even have to listen very closely this morning to hear the clock ticking on a potential government shutdown. Will it happen, or will President Trump get funding to build the wall on the U.S.-Mexican border? And we got a farm bill. And are we really pulling troops out of Syria? We've got a lot of ground to cover on today's free-for-all.
From the studios of Farm Journal Broadcast, this is AgriTalk, agriculture's national talk show since 1994. Here's your host, Chip Flory.
Hey, good morning, and thank you for joining us again this morning. Welcome to AgriTalk. With everything that we need to talk about on today's free-for-all, we should probably bring in Pro Farmers Jim Wiesmeyer, Iowa Farmer Pam Johnson, and Real Agriculture Sean Haney right now and get the conversation started. But let's ease into this just a little bit. I'll bring in Clinton Griffiths in just a second or two, and we'll build the foundation for today's conversation. But think about all the headlines coming from the White House this week. Think about all the headlines in the last 24 hours, 48 hours. The one headline that really has me scratching my head this morning is President Trump's decision to pull U.S. troops out of Syria, saying that we have defeated ISIS. I don't know. This one's leaving me a little confused. It was the trigger, I believe, that led to the resignation of U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis. Are the dominoes falling on President Trump's defense strategy? That's one of the topics I want to talk about today. And President Trump signed the farm bill. We'll get the bottom line from Wiesmeyer on the new farm policy. And, of course, the spending bill. Will we see a government shutdown over the weekend? Could it last longer than that? And what might be the impacts in rural America? Of course, we want you to be part of the conversation. You got to give us a call. It's 855-4-TALK-AG. That's 855-482-5524. If you'd rather let us know what you're thinking via Twitter, just include hashtag AgriTalk in your message so that I will be sure to see it. Right now, let's bring in Clinton Griffiths and ease into this free-for-all. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing pretty good. So here's the deal. Yeah. Anything I say about the shutdown will probably be wrong by the time I finish saying it. This thing is moving so fast. I mean, obviously, it's Friday. The deadline's midnight tonight. They're trying to get a lot of things done in between here, seeing if they can avert this government shutdown. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm not taking bets. But
how'd you like to be Paul Ryan?
Man, you know,
you're thinking to yourself, you know what? Let's go home for Christmas. Mm-hmm. Let's ease into my final few days here in the house, and boom.
Not so much. Yeah. Well, I don't know. So that's where I'm going to start is on this government shutdown. The stage is set there, Chip. President Trump saying if Senate Democrats don't go along with his demand for a border wall, quote, there will be a shutdown that will last a very long time. The White House encouraging Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell to change the chamber rules in order to pass that government spending bill that includes billions for the border wall. The House passed theirs, $5.7 billion in funding for the wall. That measure now with the Senate. Obviously, most certainly likely to be blocked by Democrats. If seven spending bills aren't passed by 12:01 a.m. Eastern on Saturday, parts of the government will cease to operate. We're talking 380,000 federal employees will face furlough. Any shutdown will impact the USDA. That means those market facilitation payments that are starting today, that are coming out today, will likely halt. So, yeah, a lot on the line here.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot on the line here. I go back to where you started on this, Clinton. What you just said, it could be wrong already. President Trump right now might be sitting back and saying, you know what, I'm being a little unreasonable. We need to reexamine some things here. And I do like what the House has got in its bill, but the Senate's not going to pass it. So let's do a little negotiating here.
Well, and, you know, right before I came in here, it sounded like Mitch McConnell was on his way to the White House. So they could be having a discussion to figure this out now.
Right.
So, right. You know, so many things still happening. Also, we have a new look at the rural economy, courtesy of the Rural Main Street Index from Creighton University. Now above growth neutral for the 10th time in the past 12 months, the index climbing to 54.2. So, you know, that's an improvement. The confidence index, however, down a little bit. Investors around the country looking for that last-minute rally on Wall Street. Markets around the world tanking earlier today. But right now, Dow's up a little bit. Positive territory. The government says U.S. economy grew at an annual 3.4% pace in the third quarter. That's been revised slightly downward from the 3.5% from the last estimate.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, the confidence thing is what concerns me.
Right.
Going forward, because if you take the confidence out of the marketplace going forward, what you're really doing is saying that the investment pace is going to slow down, that's exactly what we don't need in this environment in agriculture right now.
The President Trump signed that massive $867 billion farm bill into law yesterday, reauthorizing ag and conservation programs without making those much talked about cuts or work requirements added to the food stamp program. And one of the most talked about parts of that bill removes hemp from the list of federally controlled substances, Chip, treats it like a regular crop. So a lot of buzz right now about that.
Yeah, yeah.
Pun intended. No, I'm just kidding. See what I did there?
I was just starting to get a little giggly on that one when you said pun intended. You know? And I think we're going to talk about this a little bit on today's show. The legalization of industrial hemp.
Right.
I just don't know how big of a potential marketplace there is there, Clinton. There are some people that understand the industry a whole lot better than what I do that are saying, you know what? Maybe it's going to be a $10 billion industry.
Sure.
And if it's going to be a $10 billion industry, okay. You got my attention. You got my attention. The CBD oil, the fiber, all of that. And people that have listened to me on AgriTalk, you know, since we started Market Rally 5 years ago now, know that I have been calling for a viable third crop that can be produced in the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
Now, viable means you've got to be able to make some money on it when you're working it into that rotation.
Sure.
And I wonder, you know, I wonder, almost hopeful, that industrial hemp could be that viable third crop. Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah. Well, I think that it's early on. There's a lot of infrastructure that has to be built around it before we're going to really take off with it. But maybe, I don't know, we'll look back in 10 years and say, okay, we talked about it on this day.
Yeah.
What do we see now? And so it'll be interesting to look back. We're also hearing, Chip, that the chairman of the Senate Ag Committee, Republican Senator Pat Roberts, is mulling retirement, saying he will consider whether to seek a fifth Senate term in 2020 over the holiday break as he speaks with family and members and supporters. He's saying that we're going to think long and hard about it, and then we'll make a decision very quickly. That he wasn't certain if he would make a final decision before the new Congress convenes in January. And, you know, China coming out and confirming it bought U.S. soybeans. We had some of that yesterday, so continuing to fill some of the pipeline there.
Yeah, and that's why beans are 9 cents lower again this morning.
You're welcome.
What is going on there?
I know.
It is troubling. This is a market that is refusing to go up on good news.
Yeah, well.
That's not good.
Right, yeah.
That is not good. Clinton, Merry Christmas,
Merry
brother.
Merry Christmas to you. We'll talk to you again soon.
You have a great holiday. We'll talk to you again Wednesday next week.
Sounds great.
All right, that's Clinton Griffiths. We got the free-for-all coming up next on AgriTalk. The Syngenta Rooted in Ag series showcases individuals in agriculture whose hard work and determination are helping to secure a brighter future. Jennifer James is the financial manager for her family's Century Farm in the Arkansas Delta. She recently enrolled the operation in Syngenta's Sustainable Solutions Program and won the 2017 Alliance for Sustainable Agriculture's Farmer of the Year Award. Jennifer, tell us what sustainable agriculture means to you.
I think a lot of it is telling the story of the good things that we're doing on the farm. And I'm very passionate about agriculture and about spreading the word. We kind of have a disconnect in our country because, you know, decades ago, most people still lived on the farm. They had their 40 acres. They produced their own food. They had chickens or hogs or cattle or, you know, things like that just in the backyard. So they knew where their food came from. And then as we've migrated to be a more urban society in the United States, we've lost that link. And so, of course, consumers today are asking, where does my food come from? So I think it's our responsibility to continue to tell that story.
For more hashtag Rooted in Ag stories, head to SyngentaThrive.com/RootedInAg.
No matter what you do, you're always raising the bar, trying to do better than ever. New DeLauro fungicide for corn and soybeans can help you get the edge you're looking for. DeLauro has a broader spectrum of disease control and best-in-class dual mode of action residual. Plus, it improves plant health, so your top-performing hybrids and varieties will have the protection they need to help you achieve your personal best yields. DeLauro from Bayer. Keep raising the bar. Always read and follow label instructions.
Growers face enough worries today. SDS and nematodes shouldn't be among them. Alevo seed treatment from BASF is the only product that offers effective protection against both SDS and nematodes throughout the critical growing period. Growers get amazing early season protection for stronger profit potential at harvest. So worry about weather. Don't worry about SDS or nematodes with Alevo. To find out more about Alevo and how to protect your soybeans, talk to your seed dealer or your BASF rep. Grow smart with BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Don't miss your chance to win one of two brand new John Deere Gators during the Valent Fully Loaded Sweepstakes. The 2019 John Deere Gator is the ultimate utility vehicle for getting things done. Fast, powerful, and capable of handling payloads up to 1,500 pounds, the John Deere Gator works just as hard as you do. Enter for a chance to win now at ValentFullyLoaded.com. That's ValentFullyLoaded.com. No purchase necessary to enter or win. Ends March 10, 2019. See official rules for details at ValentFullyLoaded.com.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pest.
Get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards.
Watched it last night. I did. I watched it last night. I had to. Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. It is a Friday, and that means it's a free-for-all. And you know what? Today, guys, I mean, just in honor of Charlie Brown Christmas, if you want to call me Charlie today, that's fine. We can do that. All right, let's bring them in. We've got Pam Johnson, Iowa farmer, Mazal. Pam, Merry Christmas to you. Welcome to the free-for-all.
Hey, thanks, and Merry Christmas to you guys, too.
You bet. All right, Sean Haney, Real Agriculture. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, Chip. Tis the season. Merry Christmas and happy holidays.
Absolutely. Absolutely. A Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer Policy Analyst. We got the band together again.
Absolutely.
All right. I want to start with Pam. Let's let her pick the first thing that we're going to talk about today. What do you got on your mind, Pam?
Well, first of all, the band together again is like the one certainty in my life, so it feels pretty good. It's like an anchor. And awesome. Secondly, I got to tell you, the visions of sugar plums dancing in my head has a whole new meaning after watching the Farm Bill signing yesterday and the tweet about,
Green Trump, Acres.
President Trump singing Green Acres dressed in his white T-shirt and bib overalls is going to hang with me for a long time.
Yeah, I did not appreciate that either. I mean, you saw it, Jim, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, come on, guy. That was ridiculous.
Well, and who is that speaking to? Like, what was the objective?
I have no idea.
The first thing you always do is you know, figure out who your target audience is when you're taught about media training, and figure out who that is to make the biggest impact. Didn't work for me.
Right. Yeah. No, it didn't work for me. And if you haven't seen it, the President Trump tweeted out a video clip. I believe that he was on the Emmys, is what it was. And I don't even know when it was for sure, but I believe it was a clip from the Emmys. And there he is, like Pam described. He's got his bib overalls on, white T-shirt, straw hat, pitchfork, and he's singing the song, the theme song of Green Acres. And, you know, it a little disturbing there. What else we got going here? Let's talk about the countdown. By the way, 12 hours, 40 minutes, and 28 seconds. I put a countdown clock on my computer so that we can know exactly when the government's supposed to shut down. Jim, what are the odds?
Well, actually, I've got 12:38, but the odds, I think, we'll have a shutdown for about a week. You know, Democrats get back, and they'll have to try to find a compromise. I hope I'm wrong.
Well, what are the odds? What are the odds that we're going to shut the government down?
Well, unless Trump flips again, I think the odds are rather high that we'll have a shutdown, a partial shutdown, I should say.
Okay, so, Sean, from your perspective, looking across the border at what's going on down here, what's the thought process?
This is your classic ebb and flow, or as Jim likes to put it, the yin and the yang. This is, you know, we've had a flipping of an opinion a couple times this week, and you know, I think it's been a week where you can see the mounting frustration with this kind of yin and yang, and people are calling him on this border wall in terms of, wait a minute, why do we need to fund it? Mexico was going to pay for it. You've said that repeatedly. So why are we funding it? And that gives messaging to the Democrats. And we're fighting about who's going to own it. And that's just all a whole bunch of nonsense. The fact is the government's shutting down. That should be our main concern, not who we're blaming for it. And so get it fixed. And I today, it doesn't look like there's much of a compromise. And I, you know, the longest one I think I read was like 17 days. It'd be hard to think we would do that in this case, but it's really unfortunate. And this is President Trump's leverage. We're up against Christmas. And so I heard you say, you know, what about Paul Ryan wants to go home for Christmas?
Yeah.
The reality is all of them do.
Right.
And so this is President Trump using the leverage of the holidays against Congress.
Yeah.
And a lot of them have gone home already. So getting them back there to get this vote done in the Senate, and, you know, so he pulls his usual stuff. The onus is on the Senate now to get it done. And it, you know, he kind of had an agreement he agreed to before, and we thought it was going to be funded till February 8th, and then, you know, changes horses in the middle of the stream. As a farmer, you know, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, where could we spend that $5.7 billion instead of a wall, but put it toward infrastructure and locks and dams and ports and you name it, rail and
blending
and
pumps,
roads and bridges. And boy, you could really get some enthusiasm about that. But spending that money on a wall, like Sean said, the Mexicans were going to build, it doesn't get me excited at all.
You know, and Jim, it seems to me that the definition of wall is kind of a moving target all of a sudden.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, Trump has acknowledged that, I should say. But this was one of his first campaign promises. Now, I'm not saying that makes it the right thing, but that's why he keeps on coming back to it.
Absolutely.
And Jim, he has, you know, look at when he said he was going to kind of back down, look what happened from the messaging from shows like Fox and Friends, Sean Hannity, and Coulter. It was like the president can't, you know, he's betraying us. And so, you know, that don't underestimate the amount of weight that carries in this flip-flop.
Well, Jim, he heard it from some in the Republican Party, too, didn't he?
Oh, yes. It's his base. Again, you talk about leaving for Christmas. He wants to go down to Florida for now 15 days, it looks like. It was 16. So, you know, he may stay up here about a week, but I don't see Trump. Can you see him staying in D.C. at Christmas for over a week? No,
it's raining in Florida right now. I don't know if he's all that anxious to get there or not.
His palaces are like football fields, Chip. He can have fun inside. Yeah. I thought to myself, why don't we have a system, a measure that it's a modified nuclear option, whereby if you try in the Senate to get it and they still threatens to close down the government, then you go into a 51 vote. That would mean that the minority party, which I think does and should have rights, would know that there's a two-step process and they may be a little more willing to compromise. But that's a big step to take. But we need to stop this morass of potentially shutting down the government. It helps no one.
Yeah.
And the thing is only he knows what his real plan is here.
Yeah.
You look at the Syria withdrawal. Nobody knew. He knew. And so the reality is that it's really up to him on what he wants to do going forward.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that here next. I think, but. The government shutdown is going to put the brakes on the processing of the market facilitation program payments. We talked with Undersecretary Bill Northey about that earlier this week. It's going to delay that process, and the payments are still coming. It's just that until we get the government fully functional again, there's going to be a bit of a delay in the delivery of those payments. What do you make of that, Pam?
Yeah, that'll happen, and then, delay in a lot of other things, like, so implementation of the Farm Bill and getting FSA offices up to speed, and I have no idea. Jim's got a more clear idea of what a government shutdown looks like. But, to back up a little bit, when we talk about Trump's rhetoric, and he's the only one that knows what that means. The rhetoric about the wall and the campaign was one thing, but having a solid plan to what that looks like and actually have a strategy and have people weigh in on that so we know is a different thing. And then, once again, he tweets that he knows more than anybody else about technology of building the wall. Yeah. So, I bite
right.
my tongue.
Right, right. Hey, real quick, before we get to the break, Jim, are we really going to pull troops out of Syria? Have we defeated ISIS? Wasn't this mistake made once before in the previous administration in Iraq?
Well, this is shades of the semi-pacifism of Obama that I think you're seeing in Trump. This is his America First theme. He has fought his generals ever since he got into office, Chip. So this is not shocking to people, although it's a very bad strategic move, according to most experts. And Senator Lindsey Graham, who is an expert on foreign policy and defense, says this just upped the odds of another 9/11. Yeah. My God. But this is Trump. He just does not want to spend that money, our lives, but it's high risk again if he follows through.
Well, yeah, yeah. It is exceptionally high risk if we follow through with pulling out of Syria. And you wonder what the Russian connections are there. That's a topic that we should probably talk about next. What is the new relationship between the U.S. and Russia? Is it changing that much going forward? Jim, ponder that during the break. We'll start off with that when we come back with the free-for-all on AgriTalk.
Have you entered the Ag Explore Truck Sweepstakes? You could win a Ford F-150 Raptor. And since only farmers are eligible, the odds are in your favor. Visit TruckSweeps.com and enter by December 26. 8 semifinalists will win valuable prizes. And one lucky farmer will take delivery of a 2019 Ford Raptor. Enter the Ag Explore Truck Sweepstakes and see complete rules at TruckSweeps.com. No purchase necessary.
We're live on the red carpet, waiting for the next generation Credenz soybean. There he is.
Oh, Ed, look, it's Credenz Liberty Link GT27.
I know, Adna. He's got elite genetics.
You gotta love his 4 bushel per acre yield advantage.
And he's both Liberty and glyphosate herbicide tolerant.
Definitely the year's hottest performer. Ask your Credenz retailer about the new Credenz Liberty Link GT27 soybeans.
Grow smart with BASF. Always read and follow label directions. Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. We'll talk about these bean sales here in a second, but we've actually got some corn trade on the plus side of unchanged. What's going on?
Well, yeah, we bounced back here, and the crude oil market came off its earlier lows, and that's, I think, given some support to corn. So, you know, the funds were fresh sellers of corn yesterday, somewhat surprisingly. Well, we filled the December 3 gap, but the fundamentals in corn are pretty strong, and yet the funds wanted to sell yesterday, and I think covering up a few of those shorts today now.
Yeah. Beans, another day with some moderately lower prices. I mean, I'm concerned here because it feels like this market is refusing to go up on good news.
Well, the good news is that China has returned, and we're seeing daily sales on a near daily basis and big weekly export sales. But the fact of the matter is we're still woefully behind where we would normally be at this time of year on sales. And the carryover both globally and domestically are record large and burdensome. So I think that's really filtering into the market now, the realization of that.
Yeah. Okay. Winter wheat futures, spring wheat futures under some pressure today. The meeting between the exporters and the Russian government. What happened?
Well, they decided no export curbs, and they decided that they will continue to export wheat onto the market. You know, the headlines are that they raised their export forecast. The fact of the matter is that they're going to export half of what they did during the first half of this marketing year in the second half. So, you know, I think they're trading headlines more than they are the fact that the exports are going to slow dramatically.
Gotcha. All right. Hey, buddy, Merry Christmas. We'll talk to you on Wednesday.
All right. Sounds good. Same to you.
You bet. That is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Find it now at shopfarmjournal.com. Brand new to the shop is the best of Tractor Tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This 2-DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, the best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at shopfarmjournal.com or call toll-free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at shopfarmjournal.com.
Save time and capitalize on market opportunities with Pro Farmer's Daily Advice Monitor. Whether on your desktop or on your phone, visit tryprofarmer.com and get a generous 1 month free trial. Pro Farmer only focuses on the news that impacts the market, so you won't scroll through pages of articles to find what's really impacting your business. Plus, get full access to cash bids, charting tools, and more. Visit tryprofarmer.com right now. That's tryprofarmer.com.
I'm Andrew McCray, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, farmer-focused podcast that's all about production agriculture. Farming the Countryside is available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts and is brought to you by Nutrien Ag Solutions, the world's largest provider of crop inputs and services.
All right, welcome back to the free-for-all here on AgriTalk. You know what? Jim, can you check this for me? Because I got a tweet here from @TedHamer1. He says, so the FSA offices will be open next week. They are funded differently and have 4 more days of funding. Then they will be shut down.
Well, I put a link to some of that in on ProFarmer.com because these are different approaches and residual funds, and that may well be correct. So I'm going to have to go back and read by agency that link I put in, but it is indeed on ProFarmer.com. But if it goes much beyond 4 days, Chip, it will impact even FSA offices.
Right. Okay. So, Jim, we're talking with Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer Policy Analyst, Iowa Farmer Pam Johnson, and Real Agriculture Sean Haney. What is the new Russian-U.S. relationship? What's going on?
Well, it just seems like we're giving and not taking anything, and they're not our ally. They have taken action against us in many areas, so this is confusing. This also, if he does indeed pull our troops out of Syria, this aids Iran, Syria, of course, and we can talk chemical weapons, etc. So it just doesn't make sense. And I think it followed a phone call with with the head of Turkey. I don't know whether there was a side deal or not, but this is one of the reasons why, Mattis, resigned. He just did not follow this, game plan whatsoever. So, again, Chip, it's not a good signal from a historical point of view and from our allies. And hopefully it'll be rethought. But you know Trump. Sometimes he will not.
Yeah. In terms of the Syria withdrawal, not to inform France, like it just doesn't make any sense. And, with Mattis's departure, which based on his resignation letter was clearly a resigning, not a retiring, we're in a situation now where we have no Tillerson, no Kelly, no Mattis here, the three very shortly. We're losing those calming voices to try to hold the president a little bit in check when he does get, wear his emotion on his sleeve and does make a lot of decisions from the gut, which is fine. It served him very, very well. So who's left there? Is it Kudlow? Is it, is it Sonny Perdue? Yeah. And I think those are the kind of questions we got to be sort of thinking about here as, is Mick Mulvaney going to be doing all the roles?
It's John Bolton, which is another reason why I think Mattis resigned, because he would not allow some personnel choices that Mattis wanted in the military. So, he's pretty aggressive and has the ear of Trump.
Well, and at the same time, you mentioned Russia. We're lifting sanctions on Russian aluminum manufacturers. At the same time, you won't lift the Section 232 steel aluminum tariffs on Canada and Mexico. It just makes no sense. I have a quick piece of data here for you, Chip. The Peterson Institute has said that in analyzing the steel tariffs, they have created 8,700 jobs in the U.S. That sounds good. That's $270,000 in pre-tax profits for each job created for those companies. Here's the downside. Steel users are now paying $650,000 more per job created. That's not good. That's not good. This has been a huge cost to the American consumer.
Yeah,
and I think those are the things, Sean, that need to be told, because if you're just reading the headlines, you think everything's okay. And you have to temper your expectations and temper your realizations of what this really means to the American consumer. And I couldn't agree with both you and Jim about the holes that are being created. The hole created when we pull out of Syria just leaves room for Russia to move in on leadership. And then the holes with both Generals Kelly and Mattis leaving, to me, they're huge holes. And like you said, what's it like in the cabinet positions now and in the West Wing? There's so much musical chairs being played and even more uncertainty. As we've all noted, you look at all of the major markets just plummeting recently. That has to have even President Trump concerned.
Well, I think it definitely has President Trump concerned. He likes to watch what's going on with those markets.
Absolutely.
You see his emotions change with the markets, Pam. So I don't think there's any question. The thing that we're talking about, the holes that are being created by these departures. If they're a hole, the hole can be filled, the holes will be filled. The question is who is that hole? Who fills the hole? And that's obviously important going forward. I just hope it's not a domino rather than creating holes, Jim. Because if these are dominoes starting to fall, that's gonna leave us in a very touchy situation.
I'm trying to be measured here. Whoever it is, Chip, he's not going to listen to him anyway. It's what he thinks on defense policy. And
right.
We've seen that consistently.
Very
on trade policy, defense policy, economic policy, etc. So that's the cards we've been dealt here.
Well, I tell you what, it's tough being the smartest guy in the room, isn't it?
I wouldn't know.
How does that feel, Chip?
To go back to the to go back to the impacts of metal tariffs, we knew those numbers in a different format when another Republican president tried to do it, you know, Mr. Bush. Mm-hmm. And we didn't learn from that. It had the same impact then, more negatives than positives. But that's why it was lifted by H.W. George Bush, Herbert Walker.
Right.
And I think we're 2019 is going to be a little bit of a different environment for the president. We're going to have to see a bit of a different part of his skill set, I think. You know, he in the first 2 years, he has had a really roaring economy. Mm-hmm. He has had the opportunity to be that tariff man that he has wanted to be. He's had majorities on both sides of Congress. Things are changing. And so we're going to see a little bit of a, Hopefully, we're going to see him have to maneuver in a bit of a different environment here and see if he's up to that test. And it's going to be very, very interesting to watch some of his policies inside of a slowing global economy, if that actually does happen, like people do think, in the second half of 19.
Gotcha. Hey, let's talk about this farm bill. I had a conversation with Gary Schnitke from the University of Illinois yesterday here on the show. Seems to me like the responses that we've seen from the commodity groups, generally very supportive, right, Jim?
Well, yes, certainty. And it does provide some more flexibility and some safety net programs. It's a much improved dairy program. They didn't fiddle around with crop insurance hardly whatsoever. And livestock producers got their mandatory funding to develop some vaccines to ward off foot and mouth disease. So all in all, not a bad bill.
Yeah. Here's the thing that confuses me a little bit. Everybody was talking about it's going to be an evolutionary bill. It's not time for a revolutionary bill. Well, we've seen farm income dive for the last, 6 years now, Jim? If this wasn't the time for a revolutionary change in farm policy, when will there ever be a time for a change in farm policy?
Well, it should have been, but they didn't have the funding. They did what they possibly could to move around some of the funds. Yeah, we should have a better ARC program. We should have a better PLC program. But they had limited funds, and that's what we saw. So they were pigeonholed, Chip, from a monetary perspective. While that's always usually the case in any farm bill, definitely now because of what we're seeing in the financial structure in the business of agriculture.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of the bill, Pam?
I think it's wonderful we have a farm bill and it's passed. And, you know, if you think, you know, I'm kind of speechless as I listen to Jim and you talk about the realities of what the budget is moving forward. And as I listen to Sean about 2019 is going to be different. It's certainly going to be different for farmers because if your saving grace was the market facilitation program, you know, you got to look at the reality that money's not going to be there again. And so with the uncertainty of everything we're looking at, trade, tariffs, steel, national security, and the 232s, no, I don't care what you lay on the table, things are not going to be different in 2019. And the way that the farm bill matters less is if farmers can get their money from the marketplace, which we all want. But that's kind of hanging in the balance now.
Yeah. Chip, I think part two of the farm bill will happen next year if the downturn continues in agriculture, because Colin Peterson, who will be the House Ag Committee chairman, has already said he's told his higher-ups that they're going to have to provide additional assistance if the Trump administration will not. So I wouldn't count on that, but there's going to be extreme pressure. And then going into a presidential election year, they're going to fight over that rural vote. So I think that the support will be there. We'll see the second gear of a farm bill in 2019.
Okay.
We could see more attention paid to rural areas in this next 2020 election than we have seen in a long time, based on what happened in the 2016 election.
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely. No question about that. Okay. I've got a challenge for the three of you. So far, what we've talked about is stuff that I don't want to go into the weekend and the Christmas holiday thinking about all that much. Here's the challenge. Come up with some good news. that we can talk about and discuss here on the Free For All on AgriTalk as we head into the weekend. Hey, everybody, and give us a call. If you've got, you know what? If you're calling in now, you better be calling with some good news and some feel-good stuff. Give us a call, 855-482-5524.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture's what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
First-generation farmers are a special breed. Farm Journal business editor Annalisa Laca helps these ag unicorns tell their story on a new podcast, The First Years.
It may have been hard, but there's a lot of good things that came out of it. A lot of time we spent together and our kids, I think, were better for it.
Join me each week as I chat with first-generation farmers and ranchers who have what it takes, grit and determination, to start from nothing.
The First Years with Annalisa Laca is available where you access your favorite podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, and now the new AgriTalk app.
Find it now at ShopFarmJournal.com. Brand new to the shop is The Best of Tractor Tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This 2-DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, The Best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at ShopFarmJournal.com or call toll-free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at ShopFarmJournal.com.
Save time and capitalize on market opportunities with Pro Farmer's Daily Advice Monitor. Whether on your desktop or on your phone, visit tryprofarmer.com and get a generous one-month free trial. Pro Farmer only focuses on the news that impacts the market, so you won't scroll through pages of articles to find what's really impacting your business. Plus, get full access to cash bids, charting tools, and more. Visit tryprofarmer.com right now. That's tryprofarmer.com.
Current price times 1,000 acres, carry the one.
These days, it's hard to make the math work for your soybean fields. The BASF Liberty Link system with Liberty Herbicide makes it easier. Start with a 2-plus bushel per acre yield advantage. Add in lower system input costs and more complete weed control, and you get an extra $33 or more profit potential per acre compared to Asgro Roundup Ready 2 Extend soybeans. Grow smart with Liberty Link and BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Commodity Classic is the place to network with others.
I also love the innovation and the excitement here. My favorite thing is the networking, though. I love making relationships with the vendors at the booths, the growers from around the country. It's great because you can take that home and continue to draw on those resources when you're back at the farm.
Join thousands of your fellow farmers at Commodity Classic, America's largest farmer-led, farmer-focused, educational, and agricultural experience, February 28th through March 2nd in Orlando. Discover more at CommodityClassic.com.
I'm talking with Brad Walk of Seagull, Illinois, who tried Poncho Votivo 2.0 this growing season. Brad, is Poncho Votivo 2.0 going to be back on your farm again next year?
I plan to plant the Poncho Votivo 2.0 in 2019 because of the results from this year. Exceptional stalk health and yield. Comparing Poncho Votivo 2.0 to other varieties without it, I could see more girth in the ears. I could see kernel depth was a little better. We did have a yield trial on 8 rows, a quarter mile long, had an average of 302 bushels per acre on a independent weigh wagon, and those are dry bushels. And then we had a competitor that was 292.
Oh, okay, so you broke through 300 bushels with Poncho Votivo?
It's pretty crazy. It's just a great feeling. It's just, you've been working your whole life to try to hit that number. It's just always kind of felt like a, you know, something that may never happen. And this year it's opened up a lot of eyes.
So what about the kernel depth? That had to be the difference.
Oh, that's big. It's huge. It's the test weight really adds to the yield, and just the girth of the ear. The kernel depth is huge. So that just all adds up. You need all the help you can get to 300 bushels.
So how did Poncho Votivo 2.0 corn stand up to the weather that you had this year?
We've had several windstorms here. The stalks with Poncho Votivo 2.0 seem to be standing a lot better. In the combine, you can see down the row a good quarter mile, no stalk disintegration or cannibalism. It's just a good feeling to know that the combine is not going to have to slow down, and very hardy corn, good standability.
So how much are you going to plant next year?
Planting Poncho Votivo 2.0 this year, I've found at least a 10 bushel per acre difference. I mean, 10 bushels per acre, that's at least $35 an acre. That just carries over all the acres and really adds up. That's a huge benefit for our bottom line. Next year, I plan to plant nearly 100% of my acres in Poncho Votivo 2.0.
Get the Poncho Votivo 2.0 yield advantage for 2019. Talk to your BASF seed representative.
Machinery Pete's having a huge year-end unreserved online dealer auction in conjunction with Big Iron. Items are open for bidding now and close December 27th. Go to machinerypete.com/auction. Unreserved, lien free, no buyer fees. Start bidding now.
And welcome back to the Free For All here on AgriTalk. I'm your host, Charlie Brown, here today. We've covered a lot of ground so far, guys, with Pro Farmer Policy Analyst Jim Wiesmeyer, Iowa Farmer and Mazal Rep Pam Johnson, and Sean Haney from Real Agriculture. Okay, I put the challenge out there to you. We need to talk about some good news and send us into the weekend feeling better than these issues that we've been talking about. I want to start it off, okay? I want to start it off. And I've had a conversation, several conversations this week with Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. I've got a conversation this afternoon on After the Bell that's going to be happening with Scott Varlick. He's a risk manager with Coima and K-Mink Commodities up in Sioux Center, Iowa. And I'm looking forward to the conversation with him because we're going to be talking about cattle and the cattle markets and beef demand. And when you look at how beef has made its way into, and or I should say onto, the Christmas table and what it has meant for beef demand in the fourth quarter of the last few years and this year in particular, my gosh, beef has really made its way onto the table in a lot of homes out there, hasn't it, Jim?
There's nothing like a good beef, you know, beef roast, and that's what I'm having, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I've got kind of, I'll call them mini beef roasts, individual beef roasts that I'm going to be serving for the Flory family Christmas here in just a little while. So,
but you know, Chip, you challenged us to come up with one. I came up with four quick ones. One, I think Trump is going to flip again and try to work with the Democrats on three major issues that will all be important to agriculture: infrastructure, immigration reform, and health care costs. He's going to have to give to get. Two, okay. U.S.-China's trade relations are going to continue to improve overall. I think you're going to have a next meeting January 22nd through the 25th in Davos, Switzerland, between Trump and Xi Jinping. Both those countries need a continued improved relationships. Three, we're going to see a lifting of the U.S. metal tariffs that'll help meat and other farm markets going into Mexico. And the last one, equity markets have been flushed out. They're ready to stabilize, if not go higher.
Nice list. Nice list. Now, I will say this, though, Jim, that Trump-Xi meeting in Davos next month is so important after the U.S. What is it? Were there two Chinese citizens charged with espionage this week?
Yeah. Yes, but they're trying to keep that separate. And so far, Xi and Trump have agreed to keep these other things, including the incidents between China and Canada,
you know,
separate. Now, that's a high risk there, too. If Xi were to be extradited, or however the phrase is, into the U.S., then that elevates that chip. But I'd rather, you know, Sean talk about that one.
Sean, did you meet the challenge? What do you got?
Well, I'm glad I wrote down multiple ones because I had reasons to be optimistic about meat exports as well, Chip.
Yeah.
So, and what is the yield grade of those steaks in that picture that you sent me? It's quite a high number, I think.
That's a yield grade 5. There's no question.
Okay, so there is reasons to be optimistic, of course. Yeah. One of the ones is we are potentially on both sides of the border going to see less of a probability of three rate hikes. That will obviously lessen the increased cost that a lot of farmers thought they're going to have in terms of debt servicing if those interest rates don't go up. The U.S. and Canada really don't have all the problems. We've discussed a lot of problems, but you just got to look at Brexit and what's going on in the U.K. Yeah. Things could be worse, so there is that. You mentioned it in the opening, and that is the Farm Bill and the inclusion of industrial hemp. And this is a real massive opportunity in parts of the United States, really most of the country. Breitholt Group came out with some data saying that currently in the U.S., the CBD market is $591 million. They're saying by 2022, it could be $22 billion. Those are obviously lofty, lofty expectations, but hemp is a multiple-use crop, CBD being one of those one of those extracts, and I think there's a lot of reasons to be very, very excited about it.
Very cool. Good stuff. What do you got, Pam?
Yep. Yeah, I think you bring up a good point is, you know, what do we got to be thankful for? And you can make a long list back to the beef. I did a prime rib on the grill for my family for Thanksgiving, and I have another one aging that I'm going to throw on there for Christmas Day. Looking forward to that. Trying to eat as much meat and milk and eggs and support my fellow farmers as I can. I think there is room for a lot of optimism from my standpoint. You know, demand for our crops has been up, and for different commodities, it's the value that's been down, and I hope to see that corrected with the things that Jim lifted. And, you know, I think it's important to remember that there are a lot of opportunities out there if we can just get some of these things fixed. And one is the possibility for ethanol and biofuel exports around the world as we look at dirty air all over the place. There's a lot of opportunity there. So, and to me, you know, when you ask, well, what's the third crop in rural America?
Yeah.
Well, we saw it. It was the advent of the biofuel industry. So let's get all these issues, the problems figured out so that we can take advantage of the opportunities. Another thing I'm really thankful for is just the plain old resilience of everybody, whether you're advocating for ag policy or you're a farmer really trying to make sense of this in your own business right now, is the patience and the resilience that just comes through in times like these.
Boy, that's a good way to wrap things up. Jim, Merry Christmas. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, Jim.
All right. Sean Haney, Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas to you, Chip, and all the AgriTalk listeners out there.
Absolutely. Pam?
Going to Cuba for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I am.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Bring me a souvenir if you would.
Hey, Pam. I hear you.
Pam, Merry Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas to you guys and to all the listeners.
All right, and if you're looking for that one last comment on hope and optimism, it's pretty easy here, guys. For unto us a child is born. Merry Christmas, everybody, from AgriTalk. Nothing that I don't, oh, everything I need,
and nothing that I don't. It's Digging Deeper with the Mosaic Company, the show where two agronomy experts take your questions about crop nutrition. Here are your hosts, Kurt Woolfolk and Ross Bender, senior agronomists from the Mosaic Company.
Hi, this is Kurt.
And this is Ross.
This Facebook user wants to know, how can I tell if I have a phosphorus deficiency and what can I do to help it?
One of the ways to spot nutrient deficiencies is getting out and walking in that field. From the perspective of identifying phosphorus deficiency, many nutrients you can identify whether or not they're deficient by identifying the color of different tissues on the particular plant. With respect to a crop like corn, a phosphorus deficiency is often observed by a purple coloring of the young leaf tissue.
MicroEssentials is a superior phosphate source when we consider dry granular fertilizer. It's important to remember that we have four nutrients in every single granule. That combination of sulfur and zinc, along with the phosphate, gets more P up into the plant.
Have any questions you want Kurt and Ross to tackle? Tweet to us at MicroEssentials on Twitter or send us a message on Facebook. And to learn more about smart crop nutrition, visit MicroEssentials.com.
Thanks to Syngenta for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. For more news on Syngenta and the trends driving the industry, head to SyngentaThrive.com.